This is an institution of learning, ladies and gentlemen.
Listen to students, listen to parents.
Oh, we're seniors. This is our year to slack off.
Okay.
Bueller.
Empower us.
The best anti-poverty program around is a world-class education.
This is the civil rights issue of our era.
What makes the difference in school to a young person with their whole life in front of them? At the time, it's hard to know. Kind of thing best left to hindsight.
My favorite teacher was Miss Karen Reed in El Reno, Oklahoma. She was a math teacher, and she was so much more. She taught me how to be myself and to love myself for that.
That's a listener from Loveland, Ohio, remembering a favorite teacher. And our friend Becky out in Oregon says it's not only the teachers that matter.
I've had some great teachers in my past, but the real power in any good school system are the school secretaries, the men and women who sit there on the front lines and are the faces of that school. Get to know your school secretary. They're the ones with the power.
All stories from you as our conversation on public education in America continues. Tell us a story of your favorite teacher at 877-8MYTAKE or post a comment to thetakeaway.org. Today we look at schools which you might say take the pressure of college admissions and advanced high-stakes SAT-like testing and puts all that drama before 7th and 8th graders and their parents. Chester Finn Jr. is a former Assistant Secretary of Education and co-author of the new book, Exam Schools, Inside America's Most Selective Public High Schools, high schools that choose their students based on test scores and performance. Finn studied high schools like this all across the nation.
We're talking about 165 public high schools that are academically selective and generally exist to serve smart kids. We found them in 30 states plus the District of Columbia. They range all over the place from two dozen in New York City down to absolutely none in Los Angeles.
And they include schools like Stuyvesant High here in New York. There's Brooklyn Tech. I actually have a daughter at Brooklyn Tech here in New York, which requires a test for admission. Now, these aren't charter schools because the charter, if we can say such a thing, is to not be selective, to basically offer the charter experience to a diversity of students. In this particular case, we're really talking about tracking the most gifted and talented kids, right?
That's correct, by an admissions process. And you start with the fact that more kids want to go to them than are able to get in because there's not enough room in them. And in some cases, these schools take fewer than 10% of their applicants. In other cases, they take almost everybody that meets a threshold requirement. I should also add that we did find three or four sort of extremely exceptional charter schools that also are selective admission, but every one of those has an idiosyncratic reason for it. The basic charter rule is what you said.
Is this a good idea to engage in sort of hyper-tracking of the most talented kids and give them a special place to go to school?
It's not the only good idea. The large policy point is the country has not been doing very well by its high-ability kids, those that are likely to be tomorrow's scientists and inventors and entrepreneurs and technologists. We've been working real hard to pull up the bottom under low achievers, which is a good thing to do, but we have been letting languish many of the kids at the top. There are a lot of ways to serve them, and a lot of them need to start younger than high school by finding these kids in third, fourth grade and having suitable schools, teachers, classrooms for them. If we did that better, incidentally, there'd be tens of thousands more high school applicants for schools like this. It's a pretty interesting marketplace where parents and kids are seeking out these schools. I think it's a pretty good idea, but it's not the only good idea.
And what do you make of the pressure that it puts on seventh graders? I mean, you have all of the intensity of trying to get into Harvard sort of reconfigured for seventh graders. Some of the admission rates in some of these schools, particularly here in the New York area, exceed the selectivity rate for some of the Ivy League colleges.
I understand. But keep in mind, these are all schools of choice. Nobody is being forced to submit to that kind of pressure. And incidentally, if public policy provided more slots in schools like this or programs like this, the pressure would be less intense.
Tell me some stories of places that you've visited, that you've explored, that really sort of turn you on. I mean, you've got the perennially rated top Thomas Jefferson School in Fairfax. There's a great school down in Austin, Texas, that you explore. Give me some stories of what it's like inside these the walls of these institutions.
Well, let me first tell you about the one in New York that I visited, which is Townsend Harris in the middle of Queens on the Queens College campus. And I was taking a taxi to there from Midtown Manhattan to visit the school. And my taxi driver was an immigrant, Asian immigrant to the United States. And I asked him if he knew where Townsend Harris was by any chance. And he said, "Ah, my son just got in." And I said, "So why are you sending him there?" And this taxi driver came back with two answers, one of which is classic American immigrant and the other of which is modern and a little troubling. The classic one is, he said, "I want my kid to go to college. I want him to have a better life in America. I want him to not be a taxi driver. This high school will launch him on that kind of a future." And then he said, "It's safer there, too. There are no police at the end of the day to keep the gangs from fighting each other." I thought this was a pretty vivid explanation of how this looks from the standpoint of low-income families that want to get their kids into schools like this.
Of course, a lot of those parents believe that, boom, once you pass the test, that it's all over, that basically you're kind of tracked directly into college and the hard stuff is over, when in fact these kids begin a very high-pressure academic career that can result in cheating problems that they've had at Stuyvesant. In many ways, all kids aren't cut out for this, and the pressure that's put on them really raises more questions than it answers.
Well, and maybe 10% of the kids change their mind after they get there and decide to leave, but they've got a 90-plus percent completion rate and graduation rate, and basically everybody that graduates does go on to college. I think the cheating problem is for real, but these are very competitive, very ambitious kids with sharp elbows. And it's also important to say that cheating appears to be the only disciplinary problem these schools have. They don't have kids cutting class. They don't have kids bringing knives to school. They don't have kids rumbling in the corridors.
Although you wouldn't say, thank goodness, you're just cheating. You know, they end up at some investment bank. I mean, they can cause just as much damage as people with knives.
I'm not exonerating the cheating, it's a fact in competitive colleges as well as competitive schools, and unfortunately, it's the result. It's analogous loosely to teachers and principals changing test scores in high stakes accountability systems, as the big scandal in Atlanta a year or so ago.
Well, that raises an interesting point. Before we go, what do school districts do with these schools? Is there a way they can position these schools to suggest that the district is doing better than it actually is by having these, standout high-performing schools?
I don't think it does that. I think what it does for a district, at least what we were told it does for some districts, is it helps keep aspiring, education-minded, often middle-class families in the public education system and in the city. That's plus for most school districts in terms of the overall public education. And these schools can sometimes set really good examples of courses or modes of instruction that can also be picked up in other schools.
Chester Finn Jr. is a fellow at Stanford's Hoover Institution, author with Jessica Hockett of the book Exam Schools Inside America's Most Selective Public High Schools. Thanks so much.
Nice being with you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.